The air was cooler tonight, with a soft dampness in it that made the moonlight look hazier than usual, blurred at the edges, like a watercolor painting held up to a fogged window. Marlowe rather liked it. Everything seemed softer than usual, more indistinct, as if the world were already half dreaming. The boat hummed. The water was very smooth. On the banks, the reeds had given way to something rockier, low gray stones at the water's edge, worn smooth and round by years and years of the slow river passing over them, and beyond the stones, a gentle slope of mossy ground rising toward a dark tree line. And then, as his boat came around a long, soft bend, Marlowe saw it, a tall pale rock at the river's edge, rising up from the water like a rounded finger pointing at the sky. It was quite the tallest thing on this stretch of the river. And at its very top, there was a light. Or rather, there was almost a light. A warm amber glow sat at the summit of the rock, but it was thin and pale, flickering now and then, as though it could not quite decide whether to keep burning or to rest. Marlowe looked up at it with his head tilted gently to one side. He had never seen a lighthouse on the Hushabye River before. He pulled his boat closer to the tall rock, and the boat's hum settled to its lowest, most patient note. "Hello," said Marlowe, tilting his head back to look up. There was a pause. Then, from somewhere near the top of the rock, a voice said, "Oh, someone's there." It was a slow voice, slower even than Marlowe's, which was saying something, and a little rough at the edges, the way very old voices sometimes are. "There is," agreed Marlowe. "I'm Marlowe. I'm passing along the river." "I am Cornelius," said the voice. "I am, well, I live here." Marlowe looked up and found, near the peak of the rock, a snail. He was a very large snail, as snails go, with a great spiraling shell the color of old cream, and long, thin feelers that moved slowly as they looked down at Marlowe. His underside, the soft part that clung to the rock, was pale gold, and from somewhere at the front of his shell came the amber light, wavering gently. "Are you a lighthouse?" said Marlowe. "I am," said Cornelius. "This is the tall rock bend of the Hushabye River. Boats used to come through here at night sometimes, river traders, they were, and night fishers, and one family of otters who moved their things upstream every autumn. My light guided them past the submerged stones." He paused. "It's been quite a while since anyone came. But you kept the light going anyway," said Marlowe. "I didn't think of it as keeping it going," said Cornelius. "It's simply what I do. What my light does." He looked up at his own glow, thoughtfully. "Only recently, it's become what you see. Rather less than it used to be." "May I come up?" said Marlowe. "It's a slow climb," said Cornelius. "Good," said Marlowe. "That's my favorite kind." And so Marlowe pulled his boat up to where the rock met the water, stepped out carefully, and began to climb. It was indeed a slow climb. The rock was steep, and Marlowe's legs were short, but the moss was soft underfoot and gave good grip, and there were handholds in the stone's texture, and the river below him grew small and silver and very beautiful the higher he went. At last he reached the ledge just below the peak, where Cornelius waited. Up close, the snail was enormous, easily three times Marlowe's size, and his shell was full of fine, faded lines, like a very old map. His feelers drooped a little with age. The amber light flickered between them. "Does it pain you?" said Marlowe. "The light being dim?" Cornelius considered this with the unhurriedness of someone who never said anything before it was ready. "Not pain, exactly," he said at last. "It's more that I can't remember what I used to feel when it was bright. It was warm, the bright light. It felt like a useful thing." He looked out along the dark river. "I am not sure what a dim light is useful for." Marlowe sat down on the ledge and looked out as well. From up here he could see a long way, the river winding away in both directions, the moonlight on its surface, the sleeping reeds, and far in the distance, something he had never seen before, the faintest pale shimmer on the horizon, as if the river and the sky had agreed to blend together out there, far away. He looked at it for a long moment. Then he turned back to Cornelius. "When I was on the river just now," said Marlowe, "in the haze, with the moonlight all blurred, I couldn't see very well. Everything was soft and uncertain." He paused. "And then I looked up here, and I saw your light. And I came." Cornelius's feelers moved, very slightly. "Not a bright light," said Marlowe. "This one. The dim one. And here I am." Cornelius looked at the light. Then he looked at Marlowe. Then he looked at the light again, as if seeing it for the first time from a small, new angle. "Echem," he said. Not as a word exactly, more as a long, slow sound that meant something was settling into place, the way a river stone settles after years of water moving it to exactly where it belongs. After a while, Cornelius said, "I think I shall carry on, then." "I think that would be just right," said Marlowe. They sat together on the ledge for a comfortable while after that, saying nothing much, which suited them both very well. The amber light held steady between them, blinking neither more nor less than it always had, but somehow looking from the outside, or so Marlowe felt, like exactly the right amount of light for a night like this. "Enough to find by. Enough to arrive by." At last Marlowe stood, stretched his small legs, and began the slow descent back down the rock. "Safe journey, Marlowe," said Cornelius, from his ledge above. "Good night, Cornelius," said Marlowe, from the rock below. He reached the bottom, stepped back into his boat, and let the current take him. He looked up at the tall rock as the boat drifted away, and Cornelius was there at the top, his amber light burning on a small, warm thing in a large, dark world, doing its patient work. Marlowe lay back among his reeds. His eyes were heavy. The river was very smooth here, glassy almost, and the boat barely had to hum at all to carry him. He thought about Cornelius up on his tall rock, and the amber light, and how finding something is its own kind of company for the thing that is found. His eyes closed. The river carried him. And then, at the very moment of sleep, he remembered that pale shimmer on the horizon, far away, where the river and the sky seemed to blur together. He had seen it from the top of the tall rock, just for a moment. He had not been sure what it was. But it had looked, somehow, like something he had been moving toward for a long, long time. "I wonder," he breathed, so quietly it was almost no sound at all, "if that is where the river is taking me. But that, little one, is a tale for tomorrow night. So close your eyes, and let the river breathe you down to sleep. Slow and soft. That's the way. Sleep softly. Marlowe will wait for you, just around the bend."